Hi, welcome to the Miles from Home podcast. I'm your host, David Miles, coming to you from Fredericton, New Brunswick. Today, I've got a conversation with Eefy Hirvonen, also known as Bahamas. I will admit, I'm a massive Bahamas fan. I've been into his music for a long, long time, and he recently moved to the East Coast, moved to Halifax while I was still living there, and we became good buds, and it's been a really interesting relationship for me. He's a highly motivated dude. Really interesting. Sometimes, you know, he keeps his cards close to his chest. It's hard to tell how he's feeling, what he's thinking about things. But on this particular day, he opened right up and we got into it. We talked about the pandemic, what it's like to be a creative person, how he stays motivated. We hardly talked about his backstory at all. We got right into the here and the now. And he has a lot of insight, a lot of helpful tips, I think, to stay motivated. I mean, you start to see with all of these people who make great stuff, with so many of them have cool careers, it's motivation that's deep down inside of them to keep on going. That's what I enjoyed about this conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it too. So sit back and relax. Enjoy the conversation with Eefy Hirvonen, Bahamas. I'm Miles from Home.
I'm starting to realize more and more for me, like being creative is often more comes out of being bored than it does out of some, you know, well of inspiration where I have some sort of transcendental experience that forces me to want to write songs or make an album or something. It's just like, okay, well, I had a break from it and then I did some other things and, you know, I'm kind of bored now. And it's just like writing songs is fun. You know, working on music is fun and it goes through these cycles. And you kind of have to, or for me, I have to give myself the luxury or the opportunity to just be bored, to daydream, to just allow the mind to kind of do whatever it's going to do. And if I'm constantly, you know, watching The Crown or, you know, Bridgerton or something, it's like, it's just not going to happen. Like, yeah, right. I'm not allowing the space to be bored and for that to kind of get there, right? So it's, anyway.
I kind of feel like I haven't been bored since I started writing music. Like I remember, I think I started, yeah. I started writing music when I was in China. I lived in China. I did this. I studied Chinese for a year. I had no friends. Yeah. I'd moved to a city in China. I had zero friends. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden I went from like being in university to being a social guy to having right. so much time every day. And I got a guitar and started writing songs. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it kind of like took care of boredom for like a good portion of my, even through this, like when I have downtime, it's like it occupies this space. But it's funny that you say that because you do need to create the space. Otherwise, the world will interfere. It's just how it goes.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, that's key, man. I mean, I've probably told you about it before, but I'm like dangerously comfortable with my own company. You know, I have to like make an effort to socialize in a way, you know, like it's not so much an issue now that I've been off the road. Cause it's like, I've adjusted to being at home and, you know, just having kids and stuff. You meet people through your kids, you meet people dropping them off at school and stuff. But in normal times, like I kind of get enough, interaction with people, you know, when I'm touring and just like, obviously performing is a whole other thing that just sort of fills your cup in that regard. So when I come home, like I usually just kind of disappear, you know,
you can just shut her down. It's just part of who you are. Have you always been that guy?
For quite a while. Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, I have, for all of my professional life anyway, I've kind of just like, it's cause it's just extremes, right? It's like you go in this very sort of, you know, performing and you're out in the public or whatever. And it's not even about being famous or being popular or anything. Like, it's just like the energy that's required to be constantly putting yourself out like that. You know, you don't really give yourself a minute to catch up. And then when you come off the road, you kind of, at least before I had kids, I would just like collapse. I would like come through the door and just collapse into the bed. And I'd like sleep for 3 days, you know?
Right.
You don't really get that chance anymore. You kind of have to like pick up, you know, hit the ground running when you come home now, but yeah, I don't know. Anyway, all that to say is just like my own time is so precious to me. Even over the holidays, like, you know, here in Nova Scotia, things were pretty relaxed and they were allowing some gatherings of 10 people and some people were inviting us over and stuff. And we just kind of like, we just stayed home. The four of us, we actually had a true vacation, no social commitments. You know, lots of time outside, lots of time cooking. And at the end of it, I just felt like truly relaxed. Like it was on probably the first vacation that I've actually ever been on, you know?
Right.
And it's just weird how much it took to like get to that place. Like learning how to vacation is probably, you know, I think a lot of people are probably in that boat.
Well, it's almost like being forced to say no.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. This has just said no for us for a certain, I've been talking about that quite a bit because I'm like,
yeah.
I'm a social guy. I love being, and in fact, it's right. I'm dangerously social. I have the opposite right. problem in that I don't, yeah. If I start hanging out with people I really like, I just won't stop. And then I don't have any restorative time. And I'm like a depleted human because right. I haven't done the restorative work. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like I'll be, you know, so I think that it's been interesting to have this thing just kind of like shut the door on that for everybody, essentially. Just put like the lid on the boiler and go,
oh,
cool your jets. Cause it doesn't, you can try to boil all you want in this environment. It's not going to happen.
Oh man. Well, I kind of think it's a good thing. I mean, you know, I don't mean to be disrespectful of anyone that's had like a hard time with COVID, whether it's because of health or because of not being able to work and, you know, the economic problems that are kind of coming out of it. And, you know, there's all, it's sort of exposing all these, you know, things, but at the same time, totally agree with you that for me and for my family, being forced to stop has actually just been a wonderful thing because I was kind of putting off a lot of dealing with a lot of things, just, you know, with the excuse that like, oh, I have to work. I got this offer to go do this thing. I got to go do it. Or that somehow working more or making more money or something is going to solve my problems, you know, but really it's like, no, I should spend time with my wife. I should spend time with my kids. That's been a, you know, maybe it's sad to say, but it's like a revelation that I don't know that I would have done of my own volition, you know? So I'm grateful for that. And in many ways we just had a great year. You know, we went through growing pains being together all the time. That's a new thing for us.
Right.
Like, you know, it's a new thing for the kids. It's a new thing for Naomi and I, like I was a touring musician before we met, before we were married. That's just been our whole existence together is me away half the time sort of thing, you know? And then that was our existence as a couple and as parents. And then to spend a year together, you know, it's been amazing, but it's also been challenging, right? You we're like relearning how to be together, how to negotiate the logistics of the day, the emotional logistics, you know, space for ourselves, space for each other and all that, you know, all that just basic stuff that comes with being in a partnership that I don't know if we took it for granted, but we certainly didn't pay enough attention to it when I was just away all the time. Right. Cause you know, I for her, she was just like, there's the immediacy of dealing with the kids. We have young kids. She's just focused on what she's doing and I'm focused on working and yeah, we were together, but I feel much more committed and stronger as a partnership and as a team now, you know, and as a family, you know. And I think that from talking to my neighbors, it feels like everyone's kind of having a similar experience, you know. Just spending time together. I mean, who knew? Who knew that's all it was?
Well, it's so weird because I felt like, and I think you're the same way. I'm a committed dad. Like, but yeah. in my, I've always been, it's been very much the same thing. Nina and I have been together since before I started touring. It was always, or like basically right when I started touring, it was an understanding I was going to say yes right. to stuff, you know? And in fact, in my mind, that was being a responsible dad.
Sure.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Was going out, working, building my business, doing it right, committing, playing hard, making sure my shows were good, putting tons of pressure on myself to do that because that was the lane, right? Like that was our understanding. So it's interesting to have that lane kind of close off and go, okay, well, what does ambition and being a dad look like now? If it's not just saying yes to gigs and being out there and doing good shows, what does it look like? Because I still want to be ambitious.
Yeah, for sure. Well, probably, you know, if what comes out of it is that you're more flexible, more you know, more able to roll with the punches, I think that's a good thing. You know, I think that's just figuring out a way to take all the good things that are coming out of this and bring them back into, you know, the other parts of life when that sort of thing turns back on. I mean, that's crucial. I you know, I certainly aspire to do that, and I think everybody should. I don't know. I wouldn't tell anybody to have lived their life, but I mean, why would we race back to the way it was? Everyone's talking about going back to normal, and I'm thinking, like, you know, not for me. I don't want to go back to normal. I don't want to go back to playing 200 shows a year or whatever. Like that it's just not sustainable, basically. You know, you're the other parts of my life, whether it's my marriage or my health or whatever, would suffer, you know. I mean, just the fact that I've learned how to sleep in this pandemic is a game changer for me. Like, for 20 years of basically all my working life, I've just always thought of myself as just someone who wasn't a good sleeper. And if ever that topic conversation came up, I would always say that, yeah, you know, I don't sleep well. I, you know, toss and turn, sleep, you know, 3-4 hours a night. You know, never really feel rested, never really feel like, you know, ready to go. And through this pandemic, I've sort of realized, oh yeah, it's not some mystery. It's like you've been in different time zones, on airplanes, staying in hotels, never sleeping in my own bed with any consistency, never building a routine that I can maintain day after day after day after day. And so I've certainly got that now in COVID, and it's like, it's a game changer. I don't know. It's going to be hard. We're going to have to book shows at like 4 p.m. if it turns back on, because I don't know that I could stay up till 9 p.m. anymore, man. It's or I'm going to have to get some napping going in the middle of the day. I'm getting up so early. My whole day has shifted, you know, so it's like I'm getting up at like 5 in the morning and have this really productive time in the morning before anyone's awake. And then I'm kind of ready to go when the kids wake up, and, you know, there's that rush in the morning of a lot of energy and excitement to get the kids out the door. And then, so all the time that I was spending at nighttime, what I thought of it as my time, whether it was writing songs or, you know, even just whatever, watching a movie, just chilling out, I realized that, like, those aren't necessarily the most productive hours for me, especially if I've had a glass of wine or something like that. If I actually take those 2 hours that I normally would spend at nighttime and put them on the front end, it's much more productive, much more rewarding, and much more energizing.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of just,
and that's a hard thing to bring in. It's a hard thing to bring into the touring life. Hard thing to be up at 5 a.m. I'm doing it.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I have to, I'll have to just sort of think of it as these sort of like blocks of time and how to organize them throughout the day, how to sort of sequence them so that when the time, you know, comes to perform, you're kind of ready to go and feeling that way. But, you know, it's great. I mean, I think it's so, for me, it's just so positive to kind of, again, like, be forced to go through that and to think about that and to have the benefit of a year to get into this routine and say, wow, I love this. Is for the phase of life that I'm in right now, this is perfect. You know,
right. And do you think that you would have made these decisions had it not been forced upon you? But no. Do you think you were coming closer to being like, okay, you know, I'm not going to be out 150 days of the year. I'm going to take it a little easier.
Yeah, no, I mean, my like career was kind of getting to a point where I actually had some infrastructure and some consistency to what we were doing. And, you know, on one hand, it's nice because you can kind of like let your shoulders down a little bit. But at the same time, it can make you complacent, right? It's like, it's sort of two sides of the same coin, or whatever analogy makes sense there, or metaphor makes sense. But I mean, I'm hungry, man. I've worked harder this year than I've ever worked before. You know, it's a totally different thing that I'm doing now with these videos and just thinking about making music remotely and all that kind of stuff. But normally all that energy would go into performing, you know, to touring.
Yeah.
And you know, the other side of it is like, I love touring. I enjoy it. I love traveling and I love playing and just the camaraderie of the band, all the stuff that we all love about it. You know, it's like when it's going good, I think, man, how did I win the lottery? It's like, this is just the best.
I remember when this first started. I mean, that's what we were talking about. And I remember thinking when we chatted about touring, I didn't think I even talked about it with Nina. I was like, man, Afy likes touring more than anybody I know. Like, he seems so comfortable in this career. He seems like without the kind of, you know what I mean, the hang-ups. Oh. And so it's been an interesting thing to kind of see over the course of this pandemic.
Yeah.
Kind of to go, okay, wait, this, I can make this work too. It's not like you've, you know what I mean? It's not, you certainly haven't sat around and been like, well, I can't wait for it to go back.
No. I mean, I've never been that person.
That's just not you.
I guess you could say, I mean, in some ways, that's the thing I'm most proud of is just having that attitude that, you know, it's on me. The responsibility is on me. I guess I don't know why I'm not, I can't say exactly where I got it. I think I probably attributed a lot to my mother, but that attitude has served me so well, professionally and just in life in general, right? Don't wait for someone to knock on your door. Don't wait for someone to offer you something. Just ask for what you want in plain English, you know, think about what you want, know what you want and just ask for it. And it's not about being arrogant I think people respect that. And so, I think just in this being in a position where I couldn't tour, where I couldn't play shows, I just sort of took all that energy and that attitude and just looked around for the thing that I could do. And, making video content has been huge. And it's also been good for me just because I kind of dismissed it for a long time. I do kind of wrestle with social media in general whether it's good for us or bad for us. But in any case, it's the thing that I have to kind of connect with fans right now. And I've got, through Robbie and the guys I work with, like, it's just overwhelmingly positive feedback. You know, people are just literally say it's the bright part of their day, you know, as we're sort of bombarded with all this fear porn on this news that's just sort of seemingly never ending bad news. It's nice to just be a brief moment of sort of levity or music or just humor or just inspiration of any kind in someone's day. You know, it's nice to kind of have that as a muse in some way, you know?
And you've kept it steady. I mean, it's been on a daily. It's like you are a content factory.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Well, after this, I kind of have a schedule, you know what I mean? Like, that's the only way to do it. You have to be committed to it and, have a film crew here that is pretty stable. And we just get together like 2 or 3 days a week and just make stuff, you know? So the fun part for me is just coming up with the ideas and just figuring out the sort of logistics and maybe the rhythm of how to actually execute them. And there's a lot of trial and error, right? I'm just like
some throwing stuff at the wall.
Just like music, right? You think it's, oh, this is a cool idea. And then you get into the studio and you try it and you hear it back. You're like, it's not, you know? And I mean, of course, like it's the exact same process, right? You just have to, thankfully we're not like burning through 16 millimeter film every time I want to like, you know, make a goofy fitness video or something. It's like, we can actually get together for an hour and try 3 different things and in order to get 1 minute of
limited casualties.
Yeah, exactly.
As you said, you're not burning through film.
It's not that I need anyone to recognize how hard I'm working, but at the same time, I think people would be shocked to see how much work I put into getting 1 minute of like usable footage, you know?
Right.
And never mind me. I mean, that's just me like sort of, you know, thinking of it or writing it or performing it. But then, you know, the guy that I work with, he's shooting it and editing it. And sometimes there's graphics and there's other things that go in there, you know, it's just hours and hours and hours. So it's,
It shows though. I mean, it is paying off. I like the fact that it's got this inspirational element. Like I like how it kind of started as a little bit of like, it seemed ironic. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like a joke. And then as you follow it, you're like, no, this is not a joke. Like, what you're saying is actually, like, I think is important for people to hear. You know what I mean?
I think your description there is probably a description for my whole life. You know what I mean? Like, I think anybody who knows me kind of probably has gone through that process of just like, what is this guy all about? But yeah, it's, I mean, I think we talked about it earlier, just on a phone call one time, but it's like, you know, I can spend effort trying to make a character or trying to make, you know, like trying to have some facade over what it is that I am or what I'm doing. Or I can just take the parts of me that I think are funny or entertaining or musical and just exaggerate them. And so in that case, it's like, you're not really even acting. You know what I mean? You're just like
accentuating.
Pumping up, you're accentuating, you're exaggerating the parts that are positive and that are entertaining, you know? And yeah, again, like, you just have to kind of fall flat on your face like a bunch of times to figure out what those things are, you know? So thankfully I don't have to fall too much like publicly. There isn't just like 20 years of YouTube footage of me failing. It's like, I kind of have a bit of a run up to kind of get something going and feel confident that I can put something out that's worth getting into, you know?
But it's still high risk, right? I mean, I say it's high risk. It looks high risk, but of course it's not high risk. That's the ironic part about social. There is something that's not, I don't mean to say disposable, but it's quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It isn't, even if it does exist online for a long time, there is something about it that it's not like, yeah, I just feel like for so long I had this hang up of like, it had to be perfect. If it was going to go into the world, it had to be perfect.
Right.
And therefore I wouldn't, you know, like a lot of people, they won't finish things. They won't finish things. They won't do it because they won't, well, because it's just not quite there yet or whatever. There's something about this, you know, we've had a couple really, you know, we've talked a lot over the last year and a half about these things. And I find them super interesting. One of the most important conversations I think we had for me was this idea that like, in many ways, this is pre-pandemic even, but now is not a terrible time to make music. Rather, it's a great time to make music. It's never been easier in some ways to create something and share it with people. And if we can focus on that rather than, you know, the injustice of the monetization of the music industry or all the barriers. In fact, there's very, in terms of technology, one can record on their computer and put it on SoundCloud and have it available right away. If it's great, it will eventually get out there.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
and that's a real interesting switch. And you really switched that. You know what I mean? Like you were big on that, you know, a couple of years ago, even when we first started talking, and I kind of went, man, like for me, for instance, this show, like I wanted to do a talk show. I wanted to do long, but I was waiting for someone else to give me permission to do it. And then I was like, wait a minute, why would I wait?
That's the right approach, I think. You know what I mean? I think, yeah, absolutely. Just your own momentum, your own sort of propulsion is always going to be the driving factor. It doesn't matter how much, you know, how much money you have or how much infrastructure you have or how many managers and lawyers and things that you have. Like, it all has to come from here, you know, as cheesy as that sounds. I think, and imagine, you can probably assume that the pressure only gets bigger as you get more popular, right? You know, I assume that Beyonce works 10 times harder than I do, right? Because think of the pressure that's on her to keep that machine rolling, right? Mm-hmm. It's not some, you know, assistant or manager. They can help and they can be wonderful partners and help facilitate, but ultimately all that fire is going to have to come from her. And so, you know, I think I definitely subscribe to that. But I mean, to what you were saying earlier, I think like any subject that's worth thinking about, you have to be able to hold two thoughts at the same time, right? You have to be able to say, yeah, we're going through a period of where technology is absolutely hollowing out every industry. It's hollowing out the music business and it's hollowing out publishing and the taxi business and the hotel business. And even public discourse is getting hollowed out by tech, you know, like the internet, you know? And there's a monetization issue and there's all these issues. And at the same time, there's the whole other side of it, which is Whereas before, you would have needed a record deal simply because going into a studio was so expensive. You needed funding to go do that. And then you needed funding for marketing, and you needed funding for, you know, radio campaigns and music videos and all this stuff that just was really capital intensive to do. You know, that's been completely wiped out. There's nothing like this Zoom call that's happening is the same machine that I record my albums on, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's silly in some ways. It's like everyone sort of has the capability now to produce things that are really high quality, high fidelity, and further to that, to market themselves, to put themselves out into the world. And it's completely flipped around now, where the labels now are, you know, they're looking to the people who are already doing that, who are already building their own momentum and who have whatever X amount of followers. And then, of course, they want to come in and offer you a pittance in exchange for the lion's share of your craft, you know. But I think there's a positive part to that, you know. Though obviously, it's like now there's fewer and fewer gatekeepers. And that's a positive thing. And so when I think about that and it comes to something like Instagram or YouTube, it's just like I've just started to look at them as vehicles for making more art, you know. And that what a wonderful thing that is, you know. So again, you put aside the parts of it that are maybe sort of rub you the wrong way and that aren't necessarily figured out yet. And hopefully we can work on those parts of it. But for better or for worse, this is how it is. It's just here now, you know. And I'm not saying we need to accept it as it is, but we certainly need to work with the system to build the parts that are positive, build those parts up, and at the same time address the parts that are maybe, you know, unfair. Yeah. And yeah, I think you can have a rational discussion about these things without getting overwhelmed by them. And again, if you focus more on the parts that are positive and that work for you, that's just going to, at the end of the day, you're going to go to bed, more satisfied, I think.
Well, I think you can direct a lot of that energy towards something. I mean, so much of what I've been is this idea of like just moving forward. It's so important not to just to be shut down. Mm-hmm. If you can, you know, not to be shut down by,
that's everything,
you know, just don't stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't stop.
Yeah. And it's it's not about just like making money for the sake of making money or making things for the sake of making things. You know, there's certainly enough detritus and e-detritus on the internet, you know, I never want to be contributing to that, but I think, we can't play shows. So, you're going to take all that positive energy that you transmit to people, through performing and just put it to another place, whether it's on your podcast and trying to have conversations that kind of like give you some insight into the process or allow people to kind of like find something that maybe they didn't even know in themselves, you know, or you can do it through videos. There's so many things you can do right now. I just encourage everyone to kind of focus on those things, you know. If you're just like waiting for things to turn back on so you can go back to the way it was before, that just sounds miserable to me. That just doesn't sound fun. You know?
Right.
So
what do you think it's going to look like when you come back for you? Like, I mean, not that you're going to come back, but when it opens up, when touring is now a lane, and when the demands start coming in and you're forced with saying yes and no to gigs and tours for 6 weeks, and what's that going to look like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, on one hand, I kind of wonder if there's going to be this really elastic band effect where people are going to go extreme in the other direction, you know, whether it's wanting to book like, you know, tours in Fiji, they're going to want to get on airplanes and go all over the world and start licking doorknobs and just, you know, just really like giving a middle finger to COVID, you know. Part of me kind of wonders if that's going to happen. And if it does, you know, I would imagine that the music business is going to be not immune to that. It'll just, there'll be more festivals and more, you know, I suspect there'll be a flood. We kind of are thinking that, we're going to lose so much. We're going to lose some venues and we're going to lose, you know, artists that won't be able to sort of afford to fire up again or to go out again. But at the same time, like, I think it's just gonna, you know, watch out. The corporate sponsors are going to be in there quick. You know, TD is going to be throwing their money around at Jazz Fest all over the place.
Right. Everything's going to start pumping again.
Yeah, I think.
Do you think you'll be out there? Like, do you think you too will start? Like, having face, especially, after all these things we're talking about, trying to keep those good things, but work, like, what's it going to look like?
Well, for sure I will. I mean, I like I said earlier, I love it. I enjoy it. You know, I miss it. And, yeah, so I definitely will be, you know. I just don't know that it'll be at the level that I was doing it at before. You know, I might actually just sort of try and do it at a pace that's a little bit more reasonable. It's just, I mean, for me, it's one of those things where it's like there's the economic side of it, where it's like when you get everybody together and you get a tour going, it just makes sense to stay out for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 5 weeks because everyone's already there. Why, you know, you're going to fly everyone home and then send the bus back to LA and then have the bus come back and pick up, you know what I mean? It's just like, it makes sense to do as much as you can while you're out. So balancing that with, with sort of realizing that, you can't play everywhere as much as I would like to think so. You can't play everywhere, you know, but I don't know. I've been lucky to go to Australia and New Zealand and Japan and all these places multiple times, you know, like half a dozen times.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is like, okay, well, if I go again, maybe that'll be the tour that kind of turns it over and it becomes profitable and it becomes, a market that's like worth going to. And more I'm thinking, you know, that gig in Truro is looking pretty good.
Right.
Right. That gig in Peterborough is pretty sweet. And again, not to complain, I've been so fortunate just being able to play great venues and all this stuff, but it's like a lot of my touring in Canada has been more major markets and we might play 12 or 15 shows a year and that's it, you know? Whereas like when you're telling me some of the places you're playing, I'm like, that sounds fun. I want to go do that. You know,
yeah, like 25 shows in Saskatchewan.
Well, I don't know if it's,
it's fun.
Like,
no,
it's like a grass is greener effect, but it's like, I love performing, you know, and the idea that I could play in Canada and then potentially just like sleep in my bed the same night or, you know, be home with relative ease or something. I'm loving that, you know, and even just like knowing the Blue Rodeo guys and even though their situation is so unique, they've kind of have a system where they tour Canada every January. And they've done that for years, you know, and they tour for like 6 weeks and, you know, community centers and small theaters and hockey rinks. And it's like, it's amazing, you know, and I think
they figured it out. It's the right scale. Yeah. It's figuring out the scale, I think, is because a lot of people I'm talking to are saying a similar thing, which is like, I don't think I can go back to what it was. I want to continue doing it, but I want to find the right scale. How low can I go? You know what I mean? How scaled down can I go where there's still infrastructure?
Yeah,
because the industry needs money, and for the industry to have money, you know what I mean? It requires people to work. That's what I keep on wondering. I'm like, are we fooling ourselves to think that everybody can just scale way down and that other things will still be there? I don't know. I don't think we are. But
no, I have maybe contrary to some of my peers' opinions, I have faith in the private sector. It's like music and musicians they're essential workers. And I think when we can turn back on, we will, because people want it. They need that. They need to see live music. You know, there's something about it that it means so much to people. I have friends here who fly all over the world to go see Fish play and flew to Montreal to see Adele play. It's like, they're literally buying airplane tickets and staying in hotels and eating in restaurants to go to a concert. You know, obviously it means something. It means a lot to those people. And because of that, I just think like alcohol and music are basically recession proof industries. You know, it's like people are always going to want that.
And so whether you scale them down, it's still going to happen. It's just going to happen in different places in different ways.
It doesn't make sense to, if you own a venue right now. Yeah. I mean, it's not hard to understand why you have to lay people off. There's no shows. It's not I don't mean to be insensitive to those people, but it's just, we're going through that cycle right now, right? When we can turn on the cycle, there'll be that big upswing and of building it back up again. And again, sort of remaining optimistic and trying to keep your creativity intact and moving forward and trying to scale your life and your lifestyle so that you can sustain it through this period is really important, you know? And I think the people that will come out ahead are the ones that are thinking that now, so that they can hit the ground running kind of thing, you know? That's what I mean, like just as opposed to waiting for it to turn back on. Might be waiting another year, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it also requires, you know, shaping what it's going to look like when you come back, as you've been saying, is up to you. No one's going to do it. That's what, if anything I've learned in this business over the last, you know, number of years is that no one's going to say no for you.
Yeah.
Right. No one's going to say, no one's going to make that record for you. No one's going to say no. You know, if anything, we always have this tendency of saying, oh, well, they did really well because they have this like manager or like they're on
for
this
sure.
Label. It happens all the time. You hear it all
so
the time.
So much of that stuff going on. Yeah, I know.
It just happens all the time. And I still hear it among people who've been in the industry. And you think, well, anybody I've ever met, and I haven't, you know, you've played with huge stars and everything else. Like, but as you move up and you kind of see it, as you said, Beyonce just works really, really hard and she's really, really good. Like it's actually a lot harder. The easy out is to go, well, she's on a label or whatever. Yeah. She's got great management. That's easy. That it's clean, looks simple. Yeah. But actually the hard one is that, no, she's extraordinarily talented, extraordinarily focused. Yeah. Has great people around her, but like,
yeah,
but again, makes those decisions on her own
You know, I mean, it's you don't have to look very far for inspiration. I mean, look at, you know, Taylor Swift put out 2 records last year and a concert film, you know, it's like, so that to me, I look at that even beyond the music, beyond the actual content of what it's going on. I'm just saying, wow, that's just from an output perspective, like awesome. Or Paul McCartney said that's what he did in quarantine, right? Make an album.
I was just about to say the same thing. Like, here's a guy who doesn't need to make another album.
No, he does need to. That's the irony.
But no one's telling him. There's no, it's not about money. It's like, here's a guy who's still in it.
Yeah.
And still, when things shut down, what's he going to do? He's going to turn on his tape player and kick ass. Like, let's be honest. It's good.
Like, oh, dude, it's awesome.
The drumming on that record, the bass playing, like everything about it it's hip.
Great. It sounds awesome. It's just, it's just, I don't know that I would expect anything less. You know, it's so fun. But one thing I have noticed throughout many years, I'm always the youngest guy in the room. I like to work with a lot of older musicians when I make the albums, you know. And in this COVID thing, I've produced this video series, and now we have a bunch of episodes, and a lot of them with sort of like these musicians that have a really good pedigree, and they've played on so many different albums, and you know, played with Elvis and Jackson Browne and whoever else, like all just great artists, you know. But the one thing they all have in common, whether they're in LA or Nashville or wherever, they all just love to play. And it's so inspiring and refreshing when you just meet someone who's 75 or 80 years old and they're like, man, this is a good song. You know, they're just so in it and they just want to play. And you think like, man, that is all I want. That's all I want. I want to be the guy who's getting the phone call from some guy that's half my age to come play on a session and it actually be good music and be excited and contribute something, you know, a little piece to that recording or something, like as if that sounds incredible. That's all I want to do. You know, as I kind of get older is continue to stay engaged and have that sort of childlike wonder about the process, you know, about wondering where did this song come from, and then when you actually get in the studio, I mean, you know that feeling when you're there and you start to hear the recording and you realize, man, this is it, this is the definitive, this is the track, you know. It's like it's a high that lasts about 10 seconds and there's nothing like it, and you're just chasing it. So I don't know, I just yeah, I think that's so inspiring. You know, I think I'm lucky to sort of work with people that kind of have that quality about them, you know?
Well, and you've been producing these videos, basically live recordings,
yeah.
Right? You can hear they're with different musicians in different parts of the world. So they're a band in a studio and then you're on the East Coast.
Yeah.
In your own room and you can hear them, but they can't hear you. Is that how it works?
That's how it works. Yeah. So, I mean, the impetus was just kind of like, you know, when we were trying to figure out how to do some live performances, I watched some Neil Young performances and I watched some performances by artists that I really love. And I just was bored after like 45 seconds, like something about the technology, it just wasn't translating. And I felt bad. And I was like, how is this possible? Like, it's my favorite artist. And I'm like clicking open an Amazon window after like a minute, you know? So it just took a minute to think about how to actually make something that you know, maybe could withstand multiple viewings, that wasn't just ephemeral, that you'd scroll by and disposable or whatever, you know? So once we kind of figured out how to do that and started reaching out to people, literally everybody said yes. Every single person was like, everybody wants to play, right? Musicians just want to play.
I love this part of it, right? As you said, these guys are legends.
Yeah.
You know, these people are legends, music legends. And it's so easy, again, to sit back and be like, well, they don't want to play. They don't want to play with me or whatever.
Right.
Like, they're not going to want to work. They're not. They're old. They're older. They're done. They're like, they're retired. They only play with Jackson Brown.
Right.
You know?
Well, yeah,
and so you don't make that call, but you make the call. And they say yes.
For sure. Well, that part I kind of learned. I again, maybe sort of connecting back to what I was saying earlier about asking for what you want. I did learn that years when on my first record, on the Pink Strat record, you know, I had met people through playing with Jay Collette or playing with Feist. I had kind of like met people in the Canadian business and in America, all over the place, you know. And I just literally called them, you know, not texting. I said, call them and said, hey, you know, it's Afy, whether it was Sarah Harmer or whoever. Sam Roberts. I just called and said, hey, man, like, I have this thing called Bahamas. I have this album that's going to come out. And can I send you the album? And if there was ever a chance for me to open for you, I'd love to do that, you know? And I don't know, like a lot of those people were, you know, took me on tour, basically.
Right.
It wasn't like my booking agent, with all due respect to Ziffarelli, who's done so much for me. But, you know, a lot of those early gigs was just like me just asking for it.
Right.
And some people said, no, we already have support, or we're going to take our friends from Montreal or whatever. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Or, you know, I don't think, you know, it would fit. But again, nobody was like offended that I would ask, you know? And so I took the same approach, you know, when I was asking Pino Palladino or James Gadson or any of these other musicians, you know, you just ask.
Yeah. They can say no.
Yeah. They can say no. And just be ready to say no. Just be ready. When they say no, don't ask for some explanation. Like, they have their own lives. They're busy. You know what I mean? The same way you are, the same way I am. It's like, I get asked to do stuff and I'm trying to work harder at not explaining my no's, you know. No one ever asks for an explanation when I say yes. So why do I need to explain myself when I say no? You know what I mean? It's like, it's just, thanks for asking, but I'm not available, or I can't be a part of it. I mean, that's reasonable, that's fair, and all that just to say, like, during this time when everyone's in lockdown, normally they'd be busy, you know, playing with other artists on tour or just, you know, in demand session guys, and everyone's just sort of at home with time to spare, and I'm quite proud, actually, that we figured out the logistics of how to actually pull this thing off, because
it's miraculous.
It took a minute, and it does take a minute once you actually get in the studio to understand, you know, to build your mix up and sort of what's the best way of working and how do you actually get the track done, you know? But again, like a lot of these old timers, you know, they're so used to reading off charts anyway. To them, it's no different. A lot of times they wouldn't even meet the artist anyway. They'd be maybe working with a producer who's producing the track, and the artist would come in after and sing the track, right? So for them, nothing's really changed, you know. They're I don't know. They're sort of just like working the same way they always have.
With a group of great musicians, and they're all jamming. I mean, is it scratching an itch for you too, just from the musical perspective, to be part of something?
For sure. I mean, that was, yeah. And it's also just kind of a wonderful way to kind of like, meet people. Like now when I go, I've never hung out with Dawes. I've never hung out with a 400 unit. I don't know who they are, you know, but next time I go to Nashville, damn right, I'm going to like try and get a coffee with them or you know, play some music, you know, just to hang out. I mean, they're just like, you kind of become friends with people over the course of the day of making this thing. And, I don't know. It's just, it's been only positive, you know? So we've got one episode out now. I think we have another one coming out next week or the week after. But yeah, we'll have episodes coming out every 2 or 3 weeks, like well into the springtime, you know?
Wow.
So
it's just really cool because it is real music. I mean, it really is. You get a sense that everybody's playing. Everybody's together. You're totally engaged in it in a way that's different than if you're just playing by yourself because you're singing and it's a live performance, which is really different from what we've seen, right? Yeah. Like, as you said, there's been so much. In fact, and Tom Power was saying this too, like, there's something about, it's almost refreshing that so much of the live streaming stuff hasn't actually translated, because it means that we actually, from an audience perspective and from people who make this stuff, we're reminded that actually there are other parts of it. It's, you know, as good as,
no doubt,
it just
no
doesn't
doubt.
Work to put my phone in front of it, you know, and sit in the couch and play. It's just not as engaging as seeing Neil Young or whatever, like, as you said, in a space with lights, with other people, or in studio, right? Like, as you're creating this other universe, which is a very real universe. It's not just live streamed. It's like it's a group of people playing at a high level, and also reinterpreting the songs. I mean, listening to whatever Sadler, is that his name? Sadler Vaden or whatever.
Sadler,
holy moly, man! I mean, he's the guitar player for the 400 unit. Just you've got great guitar play. You always play with great guitar players. And you're a great guitar player, and so it's awesome to have another great guitar player involved in these songs, just shredding it.
It's so fun. It's so fun for me to hear that, you know, and just to, you know, a lot of the songs, I don't even play guitar. I might be holding a guitar, but just listening, I'm thinking, geez, there's not much room for me in here. I don't take it personally. I just think this is awesome. I'll just sing the tune, you know, but it's so fun. It's just, I think the interesting thing for me has just been all the little parts in between the songs too, is just giving people a glimpse into that process. When you're like working up a song, well, why don't we try this for the intro, or why don't we, you know, try a different tempo, or just jokes in between, you know, musicians are some of the funniest people I know. So it's like trying to capture some of those jokes and include them in there, has been really cool. And even just little stuff that you don't even think about, like what my wife, when she saw the first one, I was watching sort of a rough edit, and she said, "Do you sit down when you're in the studio? Like, is that how you record your albums?" And I had never, I'm like, yeah, I've never thought about it. But for her, she's just like, oh, she just assumed that we're all standing up.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
because on stage, you're probably standing up most of the time. Yeah.
Which I just thought was kind of interesting. And then, yeah, like there are times when I do stand up in the studio and I'm thinking, why do I do that? It's like, what is it signifying? What does it mean? What am I trying to achieve? Right? You're standing up, you're performing. And sometimes that's what's required of a track. You know, a lot of the singing I do is just sort of in this very relaxed tone, and I'm trying to just everything loose and natural sounding. And so, yeah, I'm literally often like laying on a couch, like laying backwards.
Yeah, fully relaxed.
You know? So every once in a while, I want to like really dig in, and it's like, hey, can you guys move the mic stand up? I'm going to stand up for this one. And everyone's like, whoa, he's going to stand. Yeah. What's going to happen?
This is your David Lee Roth. This is when you're
exactly.
That's your big move. He had to do 360 kicks. You just stand up.
Yeah. He was basically jumping off of Billy Lings and stuff like that. But anyway, it's all I do is stand up.
It's the equivalent.
A little more energy into it, you know,
the finish equivalent.
Anyway, but it's been a fun process. I've enjoyed it, and I'm excited now that they're starting to go out into the world, because for the whole fall, like I was getting a little bit sensitive to how much of my output was more comedic and less musical. And I was like, I'm not, at the end of the day, like I'm a songwriter, I'm a musician. And that's, you know, what I spend most of my time thinking about. And you know, I don't want to just like, I have no ambitions to be a professional comedian. So I'm excited that this musical thing is now out in the world. And
you don't want the lines to get too blurry. You don't want the lines to get too blurry.
And, you know, just to remind people, like, I still got it. I still know what I'm doing. So it's nice to get some music out there. I always take so seriously, you know, and I it really is, you know, writing songs is definitely something I put a lot of effort into, the most effort actually of all the things I do. It's like, that's the thing that takes up the most time and I take the most seriously. And then, yeah, the other parts of my life, I mean, it's fun. I like to crack jokes. I like to spend a lot of energy trying to make my friends laugh. So it's just natural that would kind of like bleed into the video stuff too, you know?
Yeah, but it is. I mean, obviously I love your music, but I find it interesting because you do take it really seriously, but it's almost like you've cut away so many of the other, it's like you always remind yourself that is the essential element of what you do. It doesn't seem to have like, you're very serious about it, but at the same time, you never seem frantic about it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like as a writer, I think it's like just the way to put words together and how to do that in an effective way, in a way that you can communicate the sort of emotional weight of what you're trying to say in as few words and you know, as clearly and as possible. That part I take very seriously. But then, yeah, as a performer, like I've realized that so much of my life as a performer is about sort of like removing the artifice of the industry or of the show business. You know, it's like, I always really liked seeing videos of like Fugazi when they were like, they literally turn all the lights on in the gymnasium. There's no like lights on the stage and darkness on the audience. It's just like, they just turn all the lights on. And, you know, it's sort of this effort to democratize the whole space and I don't quite do that exactly, but I just even just in the way I sort of talk about the music business or whatever, it's like, it's not, I don't think it needs to be some giant mystery, right? If you want to do it, then just do it, just get to it and do it. You know, there's no big secret. It's like, your path is your path. Mine is mine. Beyonce's is hers. Everyone's is unique. Everyone, there's no ladder that to climb. So just, try and say yes more than you say no, and do the things that are presented to you, you know?
Well, I think also when you do that, you're not creating a false bunch of things that you need to keep up. Like this is, I guess what I mean by the essential part is that you kind of like, okay, I'm myself, I'm going to tear away all the kind of edifice, the smoke and mirrors element of what I do. I'm going to take my songs really seriously. But when it comes to performing, because then again, like it's the pressure thing. I talk about like sustaining pressure. I kind of feel like the more fake, the more stuff that you have built up on you, that isn't you, that you have to carry with you every time you go on stage, every time you do an interview, the further that is from who you are, the more weight that is, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Over the long term. Sure. And you seem to have effectively kind of removed a lot of that. So there, which is refreshing, I think, from an audience, because it doesn't feel like you're putting on an air. But also from your perspective, it allows you to do it freely without the same kind of baggage.
For sure.
If that makes sense.
For sure. Well, yeah, I think, I mean, I really can only speak for myself and my sort of approach or thoughts on it, but you just have to, you know, you literally can't be everything to everyone. I have a song called Everything to Everyone about this very idea, you know, you can't, so don't try. You might be able to do it for, you know, you might be able to do it for 10 minutes. You might be able to do it for 5 years, but it's just not sustainable. So, you know, I don't know. It's a cliche, man, but like your family, your friends, like that stuff is really important, you know, and putting effort into that is much more important than worrying about what everyone else thinks. I'm sort of lucky, like this whole social media game, like I'm so removed from it. You know, I literally don't post anything. I don't interact with anybody on there. I don't look at it. It's just not good for me. I don't like it. And so I'm in this luxurious position where I get to kind of just have the fun of making the stuff and literally deliver it. And then it just, right. they decide they can, you know, figure out what's the best place for it to go and how to sort of put it out into the world. And, you know, of course I've looked at it just to sort of familiarize myself with what it is and get a better understanding of how to use it or how I would like to use it. But the whole idea of tracking my metrics, like how, you know, how many people like it or comment on it or streams or all that stuff. Like I'm sort of allergic to that stuff. I don't know. It's not like trying to be humble or whatever like that. I mean, I'm proud of the things I've accomplished, but it's more just like for me to keep working. I just can't think of any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to focus on like
focus on the output. Focus on the
today
output, not the input.
Exactly.
I think that's the thing is that we sometimes switch them, right? Social media becomes about input rather than output. Output's important when it comes, especially in our business. You know what I mean? If you're trying to just connect with your community, build your community of people who are interested in what you create, if you can focus on that and think about that output, where it becomes kind of unhealthy, I think, for a lot of people is when they focus on the input, how it makes them feel. Yeah. And I'm as guilty as anybody. I mean, I doom scroll. I do the whole, I'm 100% in on things that are just terribly unhealthy for my psyche.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm going into threads and the whole business.
Yes,
and
wow.
I can feel it. You know what I mean? Even though I'm in the back of my mind, I'm like, it's about just, I got to just put my thing out and then shut her down, you know? But next
there's literally, you know, smarter people than us that have worked on this and studied the mind and how we've evolved as a species. And they know now. And the tech companies know it too. But I mean, they know if there's 100 comments that say, David Miles, you're amazing. Wow. What a song. You're incredible. And there's one comment that says, I didn't like that, you know, or that was cheesy or whatever. You're going to focus on that one comment.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can change course. That's the other thing. If you take it too seriously, you can change your creative course because of those things, right?
Yeah.
If you're not careful, you can change that course, which is exactly what we're talking about. Maintaining your course is basically everything. And all of a sudden, some flippant comment from some angry person who doesn't actually have anything engaged with what you're saying, you're a nerd, this song sucks. Then all of a sudden you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be playing like that tempo a song, or maybe I shouldn't sing up there. Maybe it's that, or maybe I should, you know,
and
it's like,
and fair enough. But you know, I'm not saying have no criticism. But take the criticism from the people that love you no matter what, that you know what I mean? Like, those are the people that you need to take criticism from. That even if you don't take their advice, they're still going to love you.
Yeah, they'll still be there.
That's a more constructive criticism, I think. You know what I mean? Like, if you're just trying to please, like, you know, Joe Plummer 167, that's a losing battle, I think, you know?
Right.
So. Anyway, I again, like, that's just works for me. But I, you know, I know a lot of other people who don't feel that way and actually really enjoy that, you know, engaging with people over that medium, you know, have really substantial and meaningful back and forth, and in some cases become friends, become collaborators, become part, like, meet, you know, have real relationships. So again, like, all I only say that is just to realize that it took me a while to figure out that that's what works for me, you know. And then, sometimes I feel like a Luddite or whatever, like, man, I should be trying to get, you know, trying to understand this more or put more effort into, you know, responding to messages and things like that. And then I hear, like, Bill Murray, like, if you want Bill Murray to be in your movie, you literally have to, like, send him a script through the mail, right? Everything happens on Bill Murray's time. And I say, man, I like that. Sounds cool. You know, I don't know that I could ever get there, but holy smokes. Like, that's where, obviously, I'm not alone. I'm obviously, all of the feelings that I'm having are coming from the same place that's pushing him to sort of control the process of those input.
Carving out your own space. It's funny because, again, it's like going right back to the beginning. The pandemic has forced us to just, like, have this huge, everybody's been in there only in their own space. So it's kind of like what you do with it then.
Yeah,
But then it's
for
like when
sure.
the world opens up, how do you carve it out to make sure that I can, you know, that we can maintain the things that we've benefited from this time? I mean,
Well, there's no question in terms of promoting yourself and you know, getting your stuff out there. It's like, even on this last album, I mean, I don't take it for granted. I've had lots of people say, sort of feature the album or say positive things, you know. But at the same time, like, it's not like I'm getting featured in the New York Times or the, you know, Mojo magazines or whatever. Like, my music is just has its own ecosystem, you know, and a lot of that is online, and people listen to it online, and they interact with it online, and they send it to their friends, and they it just sort of has a whole life online, you know. So I am grateful for that, and for me, it's, you know, it's been a very, very positive, nothing but a positive thing, really. You know, of course, I'd love to sell more CDs,
Yeah.
but hard to do that if you're not on tour, you know.
Also hard for people to play CDs anymore. I mean, this is the thing. I was selling CDs because I'm playing in, you know, a lot of markets where people still have CD players. But like, it's crazy to notice that like CDs are true. I know you're kind of just saying the word CD, but at the same time, CDs are sweet. Like, I love the CD,
Dude, I
you
just
know?
bought one for my one of my daughters has a birthday coming up, and we're getting a CD player for their room, and you know, I have a bunch of CDs in the basement, and Naomi was buying some the other day at Value Village, and like, good music, you know. It's like, you can buy a CD for $1 at you know, in these bargain bins. It's just like, people have kind of forgotten about that. And the nice thing is, it's just like, you put it on, you listen to it, and then it ends.
I know there's
And
no
then you
flip.
go in and you pick another CD, or you hit it play again, you listen to it again.
There's no flipping sides. There's a great booklet often. The booklet, come on, nice fidelity.
No, I think it's a great, I do really like that format. And also, just like, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I do think like owning something is a such a different relationship than renting something, or you know, borrowing something, right? I remember being a kid, and like, I had a paper route, and then I quickly sort of worked in this factory when I was younger, and a large part of my income like went to CDs. And you'd say, okay, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna buy three CDs, which at that time might be like $75. You know what I mean? It's like, right. So what are those three gonna be? You think about it, you flip through the racks, you're like, oh, I heard about this, or you know, going in, I really want that. Oh, they don't have it. You go to another store trying to find it. And so you bring it home, and you've literally invested into it. Literally. Like,
You have to listen to it at that point. You have to listen
You
to
put it
every
on
track.
and you listen to the first song, like critically listen to it. Man, do I like this? And then you could listen a second. Oh, and maybe the first time through, you're like, ah, fuck, like, I don't know. But you listen to it again because you've invested in it, and you give it the time. And often, you know, I'm sure you have the same thing, but like, some of those records are influential, seminal records for me that I don't know that I would have discovered them through just a playlist that was like curating music for me based on the other music that I listened to or whatever. You know what I mean? It takes that personal investment of time, of money, and to build like that emotional connection, you know. So I don't know. I often wonder that whenever I talk with Robbie about streaming or whatever. It's just like, it's great. I'm grateful that people are listening to it on those platforms. But are they truly building? Is the music kind of like coming into their? Is it becoming part of their life, or is it just something that they're just listening to? Is it ephemeral? They just listen to it
How
because it's on
passive?
some
How
playlist.
passive is it?
Yeah, I don't need them to sit with headphones on and spend $5,000 on a stereo system. It's not like The Wall or something. But I just mean, you know, you have those albums that just mean so much to you. And I just wonder how much of the way we're listening to things now, how much opportunity is there to sort of build those long lasting relationships with art and with music, you know, because to my mind, that's really, really important, you know.
Well, I kind
And
of think to where that's the social media actually plays into that a little bit. It takes that passive relationship into something that's a little, strangely enough, a little bit more real for people. It actually right. takes them one step. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like if it's a passive listen and then all of a sudden they see you playing guitar at home or they see you right. and they kind of go, okay, that's a different kind of investment than hearing it in a coffee shop, right?
Right.
They then all of a sudden it's a little bit, I mean, I think really where the rubber hits the road is when you start selling tickets.
Yeah.
Tickets are where you start to see the difference between streaming numbers and tickets. I think there's some artists that have huge streaming numbers, can't sell a ticket, and other people
sell a lot of tickets, man. Oh, I'm going to sell so many tickets.
That's what I'm talking about.
At the highest price. Oh, buddy.
You know, it's just but it's great, but it's true. That's where the investment is, right? Like, that's when people are like, okay, this means something to me. I'm going to buy a ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. For sure.
And that's where we can kind of tell. But I think it's very misleading just to look at the number. You know, like Buddy, what's his name, and the other fellas in Newfoundland can do 8 weeks of touring in Newfoundland and then 6 weeks in Fort Mac and sell $45 tickets every night. They're not streaming crazy numbers, but their business is great.
No, for sure. I think there's so many things like that are, and you can call them, you know, cottage industries or sort of like, that's what I mean by saying it's its own ecosystem, you know?
Yeah.
I think you have that. I have that. Buddy, what's his name? And the other fellas have that. Every band has its own little thing, you know? It is pretty interesting, but yeah, I do think it's just, you know, there's technology and then there's art. They're two different things. And technology is by definition destroys the past, right? When the color TV comes out, it makes the black and white TV obsolete, and it doesn't have a whole lot of respect for the past, you know, whereas art is a different thing because, you know, when the Beatles come out, they don't destroy Mozart. Mozart is just as relevant. And so it actually takes from it brings the past into the future. And I think the more we give our lives over to technology, the more we're going to be yearning and craving to connect with art, to connect with the eternal, to connect with nature, to connect with language and music and, you know, those things that have a connection to eternity. And I hate to get all heavy on you, but that's, I don't know. I think there's something there that we're at kind of a crossroads. And I know everyone kind of feels like their moment in time is the most, you know, the most important moment, and the world is changing and COVID and we've never gone through anything like this before. But, you know, we're just in the moment we're in. And I think the moment we're in is this, we're the technology, we're all awed by it. And it's like, wow, it's incredible. My car can drive itself and my phone can order food for me. And it does, you know, it does everything. Right. But we also, at the end of the day, we know that so much of that isn't actually healthy. It's not sustaining us. It's entertaining us, and it's, you know, giving us, you know, these luxuries. But man, does it ever feel good to just chop firewood? Does it ever feel good to, you know, make coffee on an open fire? Why is the coffee that you make on an open fire always taste better than, you know what I mean? I think there's a reason for that. I think it's because you're connecting with each part of the process. You're building the fire. You're going to get the water. You put it on the fire. You wait for it to boil. It's just, we're so much of our life is so far removed from that because of the technology. And I think we are going to bounce back and want to connect with those things that are eternal. And music is certainly one of them, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think that makes total sense. I think it makes sense. And it's interesting to think about it like that. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's an interesting thing because my dad loved art. My dad loved art. He loved paintings. And at the time I thought, this is crazy. Why do you like, what is it? And then he died and everything else is gone. Like so much of the material items that he had or whatever, whatever he created and all those things. But the art looks exactly the same as it did the day he bought it.
Right.
Right. Like it hasn't, it will then, I will probably give it to my kids. It was painted by someone here in New Brunswick. You know what I mean? But it has this connection, as you said, and music has the same connection. It relates to the past. It fuels us. It sustains us. All of these conversations for me are about what people do to sustain themselves.
I just like, you know, to bring it back to Paul McCartney, think about the Beatles, man. The fact that like 12-year-olds are listening to the Beatles, and they're not listening to it for novelty. They're listening to it because it's good music, and they're like, oh, I like this song. The same way that they like Lady Gaga's song, or they like some contemporary song. I mean, that kind of tells you everything you need to know. It's like, we're not, you know, you don't walk into someone's house and they have one of those giant TVs that like takes 4 minutes to like warm up, and you got to like move the rabbit ears around. It's like, everybody has the latest, you know, high definition 4K, whatever. It's like, technology just doesn't do that. It will never do that. And so, you know, music and art and nature. And if you're a religious person, then, you know, God.
Yeah, it's true. those are the deep sustaining elements. And people who say, you know, who don't have that element in their lives will often say, well, it's nature for me. Like they'll there's another place they go for the eternal, for that connection to the eternal. I, you know, the musical thing is one of those magical moments for me. You know, I had last week, I put on Thriller, and Maria was like, oh, is this Billie Jean? I love this song. And I was like, you love this song because this song is a masterpiece. It's eternal. It will last. It sounds as fresh now as it did then. It's like elemental. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know. And I mean, you know, the other thing is like, why, you know, we're making new music all the time, right? In theory, if I never made a new song again, we'd probably be all right. We have enough material to entertain us. But we don't have enough material to speak to the time we're living in and to the things that we're going through. So that's why it stays relevant, right? Because you're always kind of not just documenting what's happening, but just, it's like tracking evolution or something. I mean, not to like make it bigger than it is, but it's we do it because we have to do it. You know, you can't not do it.
Yeah.
And you write songs about you, and I write songs about me and my life or the way I think about the world, but it's like, it has to happen. It's that part of it you can't control. You wish you could control it. I wish I could write a hit song on command, but, it's an interesting relationship, you know? So I don't know. I've said it before where it's like, I was a musician before anyone cared about my music. I enjoyed it. I loved doing it. And I thought of myself as a musician. And then at some point, you know, it sort of became a career. And at some point, that'll end, whether it's because I retire or because people just aren't interested in what I'm doing anymore. But I'll still be a musician. Yeah. You know, I'll still be in this process of trying to make music and make art and make things, you know.
And well, you're still a musician the pandemic has shut it all down. I think that's, if anything, I thought that this would be like my, you know what I mean? I thought, okay, this will be my out. Like I can live a normal life and get a straight job and I can just quit this. You know what I mean? Like it'll be an easy.
Right.
The reality is that then I'm freed up with a couple minutes and what do I want to do? I want to play my guitar, and it feels just like I did when I was 16.
Oh, it's the best, man. Well, I had that conversation with Chris Ludica in the early part of the summer. We were out there for dinner, for lunch one day. And he was sort of feeling low and not sure what he was going to do for work. And I just said, man, it doesn't matter if you take a job. It doesn't change anything about, you know what I mean? It doesn't change. You're a musician. It doesn't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's another part of your life, which is the reality. You got kids and you have a life that, you know, requires, you got to eat.
That's right.
And you're a smart guy. You're going to go do what you need to do. And, you know, I think the same day he got offered a job on this fishing boat, and I was just like, take the job. What are we talking about here? Like, you're going to work, you're going to make some money, probably get some free fish out of it. And you might even get some songs, some sea shanties or something, you know, it's a summer job. It's, you know, you just look at it as an opportunity, and it changes nothing about
who you
your
are
worth or who
yeah.
you are
yeah.
or what you have to put out into the world. You know,
We sometimes confound the two, you know, careerism and being a musician. And there's some, and of course, you see that as you get older, and especially if you travel around the world, a good portion of the world, the best musicians still have other jobs.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
you know, all over
I sort
place.
of think, yeah, I mean, my other job right now is just like having a mildly successful like YouTube channel. It's like I would much rather be playing guitar. Believe me, I'd much rather be playing music and playing shows. But for the time being, that's what I'm doing, and I'm trying to do it at the highest level I can. So you know, that's what I'll do. But
Yeah.
yeah,
Well,
I don't know. It's funny times, man. It's a funny time to be alive, you know?
Yeah, but you're moving forward. You're doing the,
Absolutely.
you know, and you're staying positive. That's the way to go. Family's
Absolutely.
benefiting from it. So I
For
always think
sure.
of my priority is just not to be a grumpy old dad. When it comes down at
Oh.
the end of the day, it's like my kids just
Key.
don't want me being a grumpy dude at the dinner table. I
Yeah.
can complicate everything, but at the end of the day, if I'm a grump and I can't laugh
Yeah.
at their jokes and have a good time, then it's not good for anybody. They don't care
Yeah,
what song
yeah.
I wrote during the day.
No. I mean,
Or the number of
that's
likes on an
kinda,
Instagram post.
yeah. And that's what I was saying earlier, right? Your family, your friends, like those relationships, you know, those are the ones that kind of sustain you. They're the ones that kind of offer you the insight into yourself. Say, wait a second, I am grumpy. Why the hell am I grumpy? Like, you know what I mean? I gotta get my head in the game here. She's trying to tell me a joke and she's 6 years old. I might need my wits about me if I want this joke to land.
That's right.
You know?
I do.
So yeah, it's those things are so important. And yeah, we're lucky. You guys like you and I are lucky to have that, man.
It's true. It's true. Well, I'm
Yeah.
you know, I value our friendship, and I appreciate you taking the time to have this chat, man. It's really,
Oh,
I
man, I
always find
miss
it
you, man.
enlightening.
I can't wait. When things light up, I'd love to come up there and visit with you guys.
I hope you do, man. I mean, we're ready.
Yeah.
Well, we're in the we'll be there. We'll be there. Fall.
Yeah.
You know, fall, I think, is when fall's gonna be a nice time. You guys can bring the whole
Right.
family up and we
Oh.
can take you around to some of the nice lakes around here. It's a beautiful spot. I think you're gonna love
Oh,
it.
it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
Right on, man. Well, thanks for the chat.
Thanks, Davey. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, have a
Talk to
great
you
day. See
soon,
you.
man. Peace.
Bye.
Thanks. There you have it. AP Yervin in Bahamas in all of his motivated, self-motivated glory. It's quite impressive, isn't it? You got to check out the content if you haven't checked it out. Not just his songs, his music, which hopefully you're familiar with. If you haven't, you got to start there. But then go check out the YouTube series we were talking about. It's called Live to Tape. He plays with all these amazing, great musicians. There's also this YouTube series called Tone Tools that he does from his garage. The whole thing is worth checking out. I hope you've been enjoying these podcasts, these conversations. I am loving doing it. Tell your friends. We got a Facebook fan page too. It's a Facebook group for Miles from Home, the podcast. You can go there and talk about your favorite episodes, who you'd like to see on the show. I'm on Twitter at Miles David, on Instagram at David Miles. Let's keep on doing this, shall we? We'll be back real soon with another episode. Thanks again for listening. Take care of yourselves. Peace.